Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Pieces from Prison, Episode 5. My name is Ariel, and this is my sister and co-host, Adriana.
Hello.
And I am very excited to share today's letter with you all. At the end of our letter, we also have a response from the man that we talked about 2 episodes ago, the one called A Downward Spiral. He is the one who was incarcerated for kidnapping. He shares a lot of interesting facts about prison that you may not know and how he adjusted to it, so stay tuned for that at the end. But our letter for this week is about a man incarcerated for aggravated robbery. He mentions that no one ended up being hurt in this crime and that he turned down a plea bargain and wanted to go to trial instead because he thought he could get less time. But this was not the case, and he ended up with a life sentence and has been incarcerated for 26 years now. So I'm going to go ahead and read this letter, and this may be hard for some people to hear. He does talk about some of the abuse he faced as a child, so I just want to put a little warning out there. But here is letter 6. He starts off by saying, "I came from a very difficult upbringing. My mother and father were both deaf, and they couldn't hear or speak. They were very bitter and always angry. All the kids could hear and talk. We all speak fluent sign language. We were basically living like prisoners in our home. My mother wouldn't allow us to touch the TV. She would tape the refrigerator to make sure we didn't go in it. She would beat us with extension cords and broomsticks while being stretched out. In other words, one person would be holding my ankles and one person would be holding my hands while she was beating us.
Oh my gosh.
She also used to send us to bed without anything to eat. Sometimes on the weekends, she would send us to bed without anything to eat the whole day because during the week we had school, and she knew we could sneak and eat something at school. That's why she would make us wait till the weekend to pay our debts."
That's so horrible.
I know. He doesn't talk about how many siblings he had, but he mentions all of them could hear and talk, so, and that all of them would get the same treatment from his parents, but I'm not sure how many siblings he had. But I hate so much that there are kids that have to go through this. It's something I think about from time to time, like, where would we be if we had parents who treated us like this? I mean, what kind of person would anyone be if they suffered abuse in their own house?
Yeah, and that's horrible that no one noticed. No teachers, no one, no other adults in their life or in his life.
I know. I'm not sure if, like, I think he might be a little bit older, because it said he's been incarcerated since, like, I want to say the 80s or the 90s. So that might have had something to do with, like, because I feel like the school system today would have noticed something like that.
That's true.
Okay. So going on, she was always mad at us. I kind of think they were bitter because they were deaf. They always used to think we were talking bad about them behind their backs. My dad started hitting me with his fist when I was 12. He was a very muscular man, but at 12 years old, I wasn't a very good match for him. To make a long story short, when I turned 15 years old, me and my dad got into our last fight in the front yard, and I decided to run away, and I never came back. I think it's safe to say that every road a person chooses is not always by choice. It can be by force. So there I was, a 15-year-old in the streets. The worst decision I ever made. Got with the wrong crowd, and I'm still suffering from that decision today. My whole life has been nothing but pain. I'm really trying to get my life together. I'm currently writing my book. I'm studying to become a personal trainer, and I just enrolled in college taking up business education.
Wow. So that's an interesting what he said about how sometimes you're pushed, because can you blame him for running away and then not being able to find the best crowd and make, you know, the most amazing choices given the circumstances?
like at that time, 15 years old, you still need so much guidance. And I cannot blame him one bit for running away. I'm sure everyone would do the same thing if they could. They would run away from that life. But, so that's basically the end of that letter. It's a short one, but still impactful. And, like, going back to what he said earlier, that quote, it's safe to say every road a person chooses is not always by choice. It can be by force. He really had two choices. It was either stay at home and see, who knows what would have happened to him if he stayed at home, but, or.
Can you remind me again of what the, was it aggravated assault?
Aggravated robbery.
Okay.
And he mentioned that no one was hurt.
Okay.
But, this man is a black man, and he, I have to go back and look at when he was sentenced, but, so, Nana actually did a little bit of research on how people of color are disproportionately affected by the justice system. Do you want to share your findings?
Yeah, I looked at a few things. First was the Sentencing Project. I'm going to read a little bit verbatim, but we'll link the put the link in the show notes and on our website. But they talk about how African Americans are more likely than white Americans to be arrested. Once arrested, they're more likely to be convicted. And once convicted, they're more likely to experience lengthy prison sentences. African American adults are 5.9 times as likely to be incarcerated than whites and Hispanics, 3.1 times as likely. And so then it goes on into a little bit more detail, and they say that sometimes it's not outright racial segregation, but that there's also two criminal justice systems that are working, one for the poor and one for the wealthy. And I think that everyone can kind of know that that is the case. But then we also know that underrepresented minorities tend to be poorer for a number of reasons. So when it turns into wealthy versus poor, it's also a lot of times white versus non-white. You said he was African-American, but it's easy to see that there's impacts of slavery and then Jim Crow and then racism and then over-policing and these kinds of things that can, I guess, cause them to have higher sentences and higher likelihood of going to jail or prison.
Yeah, and I think we see a lot of that in actually kind of a lot of the cases that we've covered so far, but especially in this one. An aggravated robbery where no one got hurt and he is got a life sentence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a perfect example. But, okay, so now we'll move on to the response from the man we talked about in the episode, A Downward Spiral. I asked him about what prison was like for him and how he adjusted to it. He says, every state is different as far as our rules are like among the inmates. And on top of that, every race has different rules as well. And that's something I'm not allowed to tell you about. But I can tell you that his state has the strictest rules out of all the states as far as I know. And the strict discipline as well, meaning if you break the rules, we'll kill you. There's four different levels in these prisons, in the prisons in his state. One being the lowest security level and four being the highest. Level one and two are mostly nonviolent individuals with drug cases and stuff like that. And levels three and four are a little more violent. And level fours are obviously the most violent. Fours are where the murderers and people with really long sentences go. And then there's the SHU. That's where they send people who commit serious or violent offenses while in prison, such as selling drugs, stabbing people, etc. It's basically solitary confinement. Personally, this is my first prison term, but since I was given so much time and sentenced to 27 years, I was sent directly to a level 4 yard. Nowadays, it's illegal to send youth offenders straight to a level 4 yard because of how dangerous these yards are. And I am a youth offender, but when I came to prison, this law hadn't passed yet, so I was sent straight to level 4 with all the lifers and killers, and I had to learn how to survive among them. Prison is a lot different than the real world. You can't just go anywhere you want or do anything you want. Each race has their own areas with invisible borders. So for instance, I'm white and I run with the whites. So if I were to wander into the blacks area, it would most likely cause a prison riot among my people, and the blacks and people would wind up getting killed. Especially on these level 4 yards. A lot of people have knives and don't hesitate to use them. When I first got to prison, nobody told me where these areas were. Most people assume that if you're on the level 4 yard, you already know, because the majority of these guys have been in prison their entire lives. I was the exception and one of the only ones, so I had to learn the hard way. I was basically a guppy thrown into Shark Tank, which is what made the first few years of my prison term the hardest. The only way out of this yard would have been to make the decision to go to an SNY yard, which he says is a special needs yard, or protective custody. And this is a separate part of the prison in his state reserved for gang dropouts, snitches, sex offenders, or just people who get scared or whose lives would be at risk on a general population yard. Personally, I made the decision a long time ago never to do that. I'd rather die than to have to spend 27 years with these people. In my opinion, these yards are for people who have no honor and who are cowards. But because I chose not to do this, I had a pretty rough start in prison. Wow. And do you want to talk a little bit about the segregation in prisons?
Yeah, I read, so I can link a few things. I guess that letter really gets at, I think, what a lot of people and places say about segregation. So I read this article that is an analysis about racial segregation in U.S. prisons by Scott Benowitz. And it starts out with this interesting point, which I didn't think about, was in 1964 with the Civil Rights Act that ended legal segregation in the United States and also in prisons. So then he kind of talks about, though, that it's still common that people get segregated. Sometimes it seems like it might be more based on gangs that are outside and also in prison gangs, but that the gangs also follow these racial lines, so it ends up being kind of racially segregated. And he talks a lot about, is there a way to help people get out of them? So like you said, he thought that, you know, getting out of this kind of gang is for snitches and that, you know, you shouldn't do that. But the author of this article kind of says that maybe keeping people isolated based on their racial group is not really teaching them anything or any useful skills that they might need later. And so that we need to reassess and try to find ways to maybe influence people to be more open and not, you know, rely on these gangs. But that's difficult because that is what happens on the outside too. And then I was thinking, well, the U.S. is kind of segregated anyway, you know, who you live around. You know, in our neighborhood in Indiana, it's almost predominantly all white. And so, like, the racial segregation that's happening here isn't really much different than what we see everywhere else.
Yeah. It's crazy because I watch, like, a lot of prison documentaries and a lot of prison shows, and they talk about how they're all racially segregated, but I didn't realize, like, how true it was. Because he talks about it a little bit more, but it really is. And he mentions, I'll read it later, but he says he doesn't see it ever being it, any other way.
It seems like it would be really difficult.
There's a lot. I don't know if it'll ever change, but if they want it to, there's a lot of, yes, there's a lot of work to do. Especially because those, like what you said, those gangs still are alive in prison. Mm-hmm. You have to stick to your gang or your people or even
yeah, it definitely seems like the minority of people decide to get out. Okay, keep going.
But this is where he says that. He says, everything in the general population yards is pretty much racially segregated. Whites only live in cells with other whites, blacks with blacks, etc. We like it that way, and honestly, we wouldn't allow it to be any other way. So, earlier, before I read that, I said he started prison on a really rough start. So he goes on to talk about how he was charged with attempted murder not even 3 weeks after being on this yard, which led him to spend a year and a half in solitary confinement. 6 months after he was released from solitary confinement, he was involved in a riot and received another attempted murder charge. And after he was sentenced to another year and a half in solitary, he was sent to another supermax prison in the state that he's in now. So he explains this a little bit later by saying, I was basically a product of my environment at the beginning of my term. I was young, scared, naive to prison life, and I was under the impression that I couldn't say no if I were told to do something. Prison has been a huge learning experience for me, and I'm still learning every day. I became a man in prison, though, that's for sure. Before prison, I thought I had nothing to lose. I didn't realize at the time how wrong I was. I think prison might have done me some good. If I had been sentenced 5 years or so, anything after that was just overkill and unnecessary, which I kind of agree.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I would like to think that we can rehabilitate people because, like he said, he did learn things that he would not have realized had he been out released. He doesn't think so. But do we ever think that we can rehabilitate people so that they can go back out into the world? Because, I mean, I think that that should be the goal. But
me too. And that's, like, one of the – I'm like, what's the point? I heard this quote on a documentary one time, and it was like, what is the point of the criminal justice system if you don't have rehabilitation? It's just, what's the point? Everyone's always lock them up and throw them away the key. Like, if you have something like this, 27 years is definitely overkill, and you can definitely – I mean, he's become a better man in prison. This is the same guy that he said he is taking college courses and just becoming a better version of himself while he's in here. But he talks more about it later. I have a family that loves me and is out there waiting for me. I've literally had to listen to my little brothers and sisters grow up over the phone. I speak to them a few times a week on the phone. I have 2 kids of my own that I've had zero contact with since I came to prison. Prison has just been one big nightmare for me, to be honest. I lost everything and everyone I've ever loved, and I'm now institutionalized. I know that because when I think about getting out now, it scares me, and I don't want to go. Prison is a different world. It's nothing like anything else. Imagine an alien spaceship landing on Earth. Now imagine having to explain to aliens how everything in our world works. Where would you start and where would it end? That's how I feel when you ask me to explain prison life to you. Everything in my life has changed. Nothing is the same as it was, and it feels like I've lived 2 completely different lives in my lifetime. My free life and this one. It's definitely something that takes time to get used to, and a lot of it. It took about 3 years for me. That's about the time I finally accepted that I wasn't going anywhere, and I needed to get used to that in order to move forward with my life. There was only two options in front of me. I was either going to do this 27-year sentence and accept it, or I wasn't. I chose to do it, and that's the day everything changed for me, and my time in here started getting a whole lot easier. Prison will either make you or break you. I'm not going to lie, it almost broke me a few times, but I pushed through everything, and nowadays, I'm as comfortable as a man can be considering the circumstances. I basically taught myself to not care about anything in here, including getting out. All I care about at this point is self-preservation for as long as possible. And if I get out one day, that's great, but I'm going to be me no matter what, and nobody can take that from me. And that's the end.
I mean, it's probably a good way to have to be in there, but it's unfortunate that people are scared to get out, and shows that we have no systems to assist people once they do. And then we're surprised when, you know, they end up back in the same position.
They go back. I know.
It's definitely something to think about.
I don't know. It is crazy to think about, because sometimes I, like, read this letter, and it doesn't even seem... It's hard to, like, picture yourself as being anywhere else. Like, sometimes I read these letters, and I just try to put myself in their shoes, and it's hard to think about what kind of mindset I would have if...
Yeah.
27 years, and you don't even know when you're going to get out.
Definitely be... Yeah.
So gotta make the most of it.
So mentally difficult.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. As always, if anyone has any questions that they want me to send any of the people in our letters that we talked about, I can do that. I wrote a response to the man in the first letter that I just talked about that went through
abuse. The one who has a charge of aggravated robbery. Yes.
Yes. I basically just asked him, like, does he think he made the right decision? Because I know he said, like, biggest mistake of my life, running away.
And he didn't talk about his case a lot. Did you ask?
I know.
Did you ask about that?
Yeah, I asked about that, and then, yeah, I just asked more, like, where do you think, if you could go back and change what you did, would you change that, or would you still run away? So, yeah, that is what I asked. But we will see what he says to that. I will read that response, and so like and subscribe to our podcast so you can know when we release our new episodes, and rate us so we know how we're doing, and give our website a visit at pfppodcast.com. There you can see all the sources that we used in this episode and just read a little bit about us. And so we will be back next week with another episode, our episode 6. And so stay tuned for that. And thank you. See you guys later. Bye.